Hey, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambreth. You can listen and subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, the host site, and now even on Spotify. How do you like that, folks? You know what you can do. You can follow the show on Twitter. You can like it on Facebook. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. And you can even follow me. I'm your host. Follow me on Twitter at Chris Lambreth. This is episode 402. There's no guest. It's just me sitting here in my apartment on my couch. I need to be doing my laundry. I need to be folding up clothes and hanging them up. I could be straightening up my apartment that I look like a savage. And it makes me look like I don't know. But I need to clean this place up. I need to just throw some stuff away. I need to reorganize my life. Maybe I do need Marie Kondo. I don't know. I didn't watch her show on Netflix, but I feel like I need her. But then I hear that she's opened up a store where you can buy her shit to clutter up your house. And then she comes in and says, you need to get rid of this shit. I don't know. But nevertheless, this is this is episode 402 of the show. Happy Groundhog Day. Happy Black History Month. Happy Super Bowl Sunday. Let's go, Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's get this. Let's finish this year out. Let's break the Madden curse. Let's be the first Madden cover boy to win the Super Bowl. I think Tom Brady was on the cover of Madden when the Patriots won. There's been people that have broken the curse, but I need a quarterback of color. And I know as soon as they got into the Super Bowl, as soon as they won the AFC Championship, people were coming up with these tweets from when Patrick Mahomes was like 16 years old. They're trying to say, did he defend George Zimmerman? And I see this article, and I don't think he did. He didn't defend him. You know, they just, granted, was he probably one of those kids? Where is he from? Is he from Texas? I know he went to Texas Tech. And in one of those southern states that, like, you know, let's see where he's from. He's from Tyler, Texas. And, you know, you could kind of see, I don't know. I don't think, I read the article and I looked at those tweets and it didn't look like he was just kind of like, obviously don't fight back at cops because you'll probably get shot. And then he kind of knew when the Zimmerman verdict came around, he had some tweet. I'll even read the tweet. Let me find the tweet that I want that makes my argument that makes my argument look good. But this is a tweet from July of 2013 where he says, with regards to the verdict, Zimmerman verdict, knew this was going to happen. At least you know Zimmerman will never be able to go in public again. Well, he was wrong about that because Zimmerman has been gallivanting around selling his gun and all the bullshit that he's been doing. But I'm still rooting for you, Patrick. And the three black guys that were in the barbershop on Friday, we're rooting for you. And it's going to be good. Am I going to be nervous? Probably. The 49ers have a good defense. I'm worried about Richard Sherman roaming around in the secondary. But I also have faith that if the 49ers score on the Chiefs defense, I think they can get these points back. So I think it might have to – I don't think they can wait like they did the last two games to try to come back and beat people. Because it might not happen that way. And then you have a half hour to wait in between halves, in halftime, and you got like Jennifer Lopez and Shakira shaking their hips, and that could be distracting. So I hope that nobody's watching. None of the Chiefs are watching that. Watch it after you win the Super Bowl. Okay. Yeah, so I got some wings. I'm going to have some wings. I wish that I knew, like, Hooters. I went to Hooters last night and got something to eat and then had some wings for today. But they had this deal where, like, an AFC deal where you get 50 wings and then an NFC deal where it's like you maybe get, like, $75 for reasonable prices, I must add. But I wasn't going to a party or anything, so I'm just gonna chill here and watch the game. Hopefully I don't fall asleep on it. I'm hoping to get a midday nap before the game. I remember the last time, I think when Colin Kaepernick and the Ravens were playing, Colin Kaepernick took the Niners to the last time the 49ers went. I remember dozing off and like, oh, this is actually a good game. Waking up to that shit. But I've had to get up early for so many years that my body clock is just tuned to going to sleep at a certain time and then getting up, and then like the weekends are just kind of crazy, you know. So it goes. Rooting for that to happen. I was going to post a end of the year movie extravaganza with the homie J.O. Covan and my good pal Jeff Cerulli. That will go up next week, but the Patreon folks, you will get that this week. You'll get it this week. So subscribe to Patreon. There's good stuff there. There's several hours of bonus content, of extra content and interviews on there. So I encourage you to join. But the Patreon folks, you will get that this week. And freeloaders, you get it next week. And then the Patreon folks, you'll get something else on the next Sunday go round or whatever. I'll make it happen. All right. I was going to post that this week, but then we had right after I posted last week's episode with David A. Gregory, I heard the news about Kobe Bryant and the eight other people that died in the crash, his daughter included. And I was bummed out like mostly everybody else. And that Sunday, like right when I found out that it happened, I was going to try to take my midday nap and I couldn't really sleep. And I was just kind of bugged out all day. And I talked to my dad for a little bit, talked to him about it. And it's just really sad. It's just I don't know what I can say that anybody else hasn't already said, but I will share my, I'll just share my thoughts on Kobe and what he meant to me. He was the first guy, the first player that I felt like I could relate to. I wasn't as cool as him or anything like that, but he was just my age. He was 2 years older than me. He was in the same high school graduating class as my cousins, and I always kind of just had that fondness for him because he was a dude that was my age and he was an amazing ball player. And I just remember like my late teens, early 20s, I grew out my first real fro because Kobe had one. I liked his fro. I thought he was cool. And I remember like graduating high school in 98, and I was a gamer back then. Most of the time, like I think everybody gamed back then, but I wasn't a Nintendo guy. But I remember Kobe had that deal and I bought a Nintendo 64 because it came out with, they had a NBA courtside with Kobe Bryant. And I tweeted a couple things like on last Sunday, just trying to kind of tweet through it and just thinking about how much I remember liking him. I just remember being, you know, talking to my parents about it last week, you know, and it, just thinking about, like, I just remember times where Kobe and Shaq were going against the Kings. And I remember just being over at a friend's house, like a parent's friend's house. And we were having like a cookout or something. And I just remember being one of the only people that was rooting for Kobe because he was the young dude. And they were going against the Kings, even though I liked Chris Webber back then too. I mean, I kind of just started liking those players, like a lot of guys, as opposed to just really being into teams. But he's one of those dudes that was just fantastic player. He had that tenacity. He had, he wasn't afraid to fail. And that's like when he missed those shots against Utah, I think in the playoffs, and he shot those air balls and stuff, but nobody else wanted to shoot, and he shot anyway. And he learned from that. And it's something that my dad used to tell me when I was a kid, like with regards to sports, when it was like, oh, if you like a player, try to emulate him and try to incorporate some of that into your game. You know, you want to grab rebounds like Barkley. You want to be able to score like Jordan, or be in the post like Patrick Ewing or Charles Oakley or something like that. And I wasn't a good basketball player. I could shoot a little bit. I was good at defense. My peak, my basketball, the highlight of my basketball life was sixth grade. I was 12 years old. We won the championship, the CYO championship in DC, and we were 12-0. We never lost a game that year. And I remember the first one, like maybe like a preseason game or something, or like a, one of the early games. The year before, we were trash. We were really sorry. And I scored like the most points that we had scored in a game at the time. And I thought that it was going to lead to something else. But we were just not a good team. It was an all black team and one white boy named Josh that used to dribble his ass off. He could dribble. We couldn't shoot. We sucked. Then the second year, we got a new coach, and he was really good. He was a former, I think he was a detective or a police officer. He was a policeman, and him and his brother coached us, and we, you know, went on that run. And this is all over the place, and if you listen to this podcast for the almost 7 years I've been doing it, I'm gonna get you somewhere. And that was the highlight of my career. And I remember that the sixth grade year of playing. I remember I was mad that we lost or something, and I cried after the game. And then I got put on the bench. I got put on the bench, and I remember that I was coming off the bench for most of the season, and I was kind of like the sixth man or like Robert Horry. And I would have my points here and there. And the championship game, we played this team called Our Lady of Perpetual Help. That those guys were like big dude. No. We had to play them. They were like the older kids. They looked older than us. Like some of them kind of had facial hair. They might have been in eighth grade. We were in like, most of us were in sixth grade. And they lost to this team. I think they lost to Holy Family, which was a team that we've beaten before. And so we ended up playing Holy Family. And I had like 6 points in that game. So I scored some buckets. So it made me feel good that I performed well. And then seventh grade, I played. The next year I went to another school, Mount Calvary. My school that I had my best season was at St. Francis Xavier in Southeast DC, and went to Mount Calvary in Forestville, and our coach was not good, and I sucked seventh grade. You know, the team was really bad if I was the point guard. We used to have this other kid. What was his name? I forget his name, but he said, "Chris, I want to bring the ball up." And he would bring the ball up, and as soon as the defenders would come to him at half court, he would pass me the ball. I would pass it, people would pass it around, and I would just fucking shoot it. I didn't care. We were sucked. And so I didn't play anymore eighth grade, and I tried to play my freshman year in high school, play on the freshman team, and I got cut the first day because I was not good. I was horrible. I was trash. And so then my sophomore year, I became the stat boy. I did stats. And then I did theater. And so now you have this podcast. So that's in a nutshell. So it made me think about that. So I was never going to be a pro athlete. If I had a chance, maybe it would have been in football if I liked it more. And if I wanted it, I probably would have had a chance to maybe play in high school and maybe get to college. If I was worked as hard as that as I did with theater, I would have. But it didn't work out that way for me. But I was never going to be a pro athlete, much to my dad's dismay. But I just remember liking Kobe and taking that tenacity that he had and just applying it to what I was doing. Like, I just remember being really cared about theater and acting and stuff and being a psycho about it. And the funny thing is, but when it comes to Kobe, like, you think about, like, what he meant to LA, what he meant to the NBA, but, like, more importantly to LA and the culture. Like, there's people that are really, like, fucked up over this, not outside of his family and the people that really knew him intimately and that loved him, but it's like a lot of people that didn't even know him are really wrecked. And just like listening to people on podcasts, and especially like Bomani Jones, like if you really want to get like a good insight, I would say good podcast to listen to was Bomani Jones, where he talks about Kobe, and they have people call in and talk about what Kobe meant to them. And these are grown men just crying on the phone, leaving a voicemail, crying over Kobe dying. The podcast Pod Don't Lie with Sam Morril and Stavros Halkias, two New York comics, had a really good, it added a lot of levity to what has been a really horrible, fucked up week for a lot of people. But I just remember, like, I was listening to an old, like, an episode from a couple months ago of this show when Luisa Diaz was on, and I was talking about, like, how you can have, like, this Kobe Bryant psycho, almost sociopathic obsession with your craft. You can either be that, or the end of that, the other spectrum is, like, somebody like Andrew Bynum. And Luisa said, well, I don't know who Andrew Bynum is, so I guess that's your point. And I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle, somewhere leaning towards like the Kobe thing. And it's almost like you none of us will ever, a lot of people listening to this will never be as good as their craft as Kobe Bryant was at basketball, myself included. But if you don't try, but what happens if you tried to do that? Like, if you just had like a couple, you know how people, I say it too, like if I could have a percentage of what that guy had, like a fraction of that person's drive, where would that lead me? Where would I end up? You know, like people, the knock against Kobe through most of his career was that he was just trying to be like Mike. He's just trying to be like Jordan, blah, blah, blah. But he was the most reasonable facsimile of Michael Jordan, like the playing, like the jump shots, the fadeaway, the way that he talked, the way that he tried to walk like Jordan. But most of that, but in that, he became himself. He became Kobe Bryant. There's this Kendrick Lamar record called I Want to Be Heard, and I'm going to fuck up the lyrics, but it kind of started out saying like, I used to want to be like Jay-Z, until I realized that Jay wasn't me. And then I became Kendrick Lamar. And this was even before all the Grammys and before all the accolades and stuff. And you just kind of have to realize that. That's like being a comic. You start off wanting to be like your heroes, wanting to be like Martin Lawrence, or that's how I wanted to be. That's what I wanted to be like. And you kind of start being like these, being like certain people or a certain comic. And then you kind of find yourself. You find yourself in that imitation. And I guess I did in a lot of ways apply what some of that Mamba mentality, if you will. I know a lot of people are making fun of that. Kobe would have wanted me to tell this dick joke the way that I'm telling it. But it helps. It helps for some people. Like, there was a guy calling into a show, calling into Bo's show, saying that, you know, he wanted to be the Kobe Bryant of chefs. He wanted to be that, inspired him. He inspired a lot of people to be great at what they, at their craft, at what they do. I don't know, the thing that hurts me the most, other than his daughter being on the plane, other than those other folks dying, was the fact that I feel like we've all, as fans, just speaking from a fan standpoint, we were robbed of his second act. Because it felt like he was just getting started. Like, he won the Oscar. He was doing all these great things, starting trust funds for athletes and stuff, like all this cool stuff that he was doing. But just hearing him on these podcasts and like talking shit to former players, and he would talk shit to them, but at the same time, there's a generation of basketball players, folk guys that are in the league now that have been inspired by him, that have been influenced, that have been mentored by him. He wasn't one of those dudes that, I'm great and I'm just going to keep all this knowledge and I'm not going to share it with anybody. I'm just going to keep it to myself and fuck you guys. He wasn't like that, apparently. And these people loved him. They loved him. And they, a lot of people were hurt. You know, they said they should have canceled the game and all the games on Sunday, which I think they probably could have. I mean, they're going to get there, but I guess it was too much money to be made. I don't know. But then it happened, I guess, right before all those games. Like, it happened, what, 10, 8, maybe 1 o'clock East Coast time, I think, around that time, 10 West Coast time. I don't know. But the thing, and so we got robbed of that. One of my recent favorite Kobe moments is just, and I talked about it on the show. I don't remember what episode it was of this show, but I remember talking about it. when he took this picture on Instagram. So I found it on Instagram where, I say, let's see. So there's a picture that Kobe posted on Instagram. And this had to be this was in September. And this is a picture of him with his girls, his team. And he says, here's our fourth place winners. And winners is in quotes. Here's our fourth place winners picture. LOL. Six of the kids in the picture stayed with me and worked every single day to get better and continue to work to this day. The seventh player, parentheses, not in pick, missed this game for a dance recital, so that should tell you where her focus was at the time. From the original seven, we have added a player 2 years younger, sixth grade now, a player whose team in our area folded and whose family moved here from Tennessee. The beauty of coaching is growing the players from the ground up. The journey continues. Hashtag Mambas. So this like tickled me so much, and I screenshotted this Instagram post from Kobe, and I said, I tweeted, I was a lot like Kobe when I directed children's theater, but my production of Oliver was next level. That just means that, like, just because those girls are 11, 12, 10 through 12 or whatever, it doesn't mean that they can't be great or they can't not strive to be great. I continue to say the best job that I ever had in my adult life was teaching at a theater camp in Skokie, Illinois, summer on Broadway. It was a theater camp with 8 to 14 year old kids. They were split up into two groups. They were like the juniors and the seniors. The juniors were the like maybe 8 to 10. Maybe young kids, and then the older kids are like maybe like 12 to 14. And you do these plays with them, and you know, it was just like, it was an expensive camp because it was in the AC. It was indoor. It was an indoor camp, and the parents put out more money for their kids to be in that camp because it was air conditioned and it was like a higher, it was a top tier class, basically. And I was like, I'm not going to put on no bullshit. You're not going to have my name, stuff that I've written, stuff that we've rehearsed. I'm not going to let any bullshit be on stage. And I was 23 at the time. And I just remember, you know, I think back in that time, that was like 2003. I want to say that, what's her name? Hillary Duff was doing the Hannah Montana stuff. And I was like, do you think Hillary Duff, you think she doesn't work hard? She learns her lines and she gets on there and she learns her lines. You know, I was just telling them anything. And she obviously did do that stuff. And I remember taking kids and making them do things that they would never thought that they could do and that their parents never thought that they could do, you know. And it was dope shit. And I remember a couple of years ago, there was this one little girl. I think we had worked together at the theater camp. And then I worked with her and her brother at the theater camp. And then while I was there, I think my last year of working in Skokie, I ran a before and after school program at one of the schools in the Skokie Park District. And then during the day, I was working at that school and teaching a special ed assistant or whatever. And so I would be at that school like 12 hours a day. And then I would go do rehearsal and do plays and shit. So I was with that girl and her brother. She was a part of that before and after school program. And then a couple of years ago, so that was like, that ended, I think, 2006, 2007. And I remember getting a message from her on Facebook saying, hey, Chris, you don't remember, you might not remember me, but this was, I'm not going to say this is the kid's name. And she said, I remember you. Thanks for, she just kind of thanked me for help, just being her teacher and stuff like that. And she wasn't special needs. She was in the before and after. Anyway, she just thanked me and told me, oh, I'm in college now and blah, 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 and all that stuff, man. It was just like, it was really sweet because she didn't have to reach out. And there were, I was not easy on those kids. I didn't treat them like adults, but I just treated them like little people. And I listened to them. I wouldn't baby them. I would talk to them like they were little people, because that's what they were. I gave them that respect, and I wanted the same respect from them. And I don't know if that's in really the Mamba mentality, but I could relate to Kobe on that level where it was like, yeah, I don't care that you guys are kids. I want you to be great. And I was even thinking, I didn't even remember this, but it made me think of when I was just, you know, thinking about this stuff in my life. And, you know, this guy was 2 years older than me. And I'm at a point in my life where there's career things that I'll talk about a little later that have been happening to me that I'm experiencing now, that I feel like I'm going to be 40 next month. And I feel like I'm just getting started. I heard some of my favorite rappers saying that same shit, and that they're 40. They've achieved a lot of great things, way more than I have. And they're like, I feel like I'm just getting started. And you think about like Kobe, and you're thinking about his kids that aren't going to have these experiences with him, you know? I do remember another kid thing, another teacher moment that I had was right before I, because you kind of like, I'm sure that I mentioned this before, where I was like a young kid, young actor, 22 years old, in grad school, trying to I don't know, trying to be, not necessarily, everybody wants to, if you're famous, if you're known for your work, that means you're working and you're getting all that. Everybody wants to be known and respected for their work, if whether you're in entertainment or not. But I think everybody wants that recognition if you dedicate your life to something. I think I was pretty, I'd like to think that back then I was pretty even keeled about show business and about being successful and wanting fame and all that stuff. I wasn't a psycho about it or anything. I wasn't like, I just want to be famous. It was sort of like, I was thinking to myself, like, I'm in grad school. I want to do TV and movies. I want to fucking kill it and all this shit like that. And I was thinking my first year in Chicago, school was over, about to be over. And I told my parents, I talked about this with David Gregory last week, but I'll go more in depth here, where I was just sort of like, you know, I want to stay out here. I want to, like, you know, just see what it's like, be on my own. And my parents were like, okay, well, you want to get an apartment, you got to get a job and we'll help you out and we'll make something happen. And that's thankful. That's the blessing to have great parents that supported me. And I came back with two jobs. I had a part-time job at Best Buy. And I had gotten that teaching gig out in Skokie. And I had friends that had done it the year before. And each year, you know, each year that I was there, it kept getting better. And I was kind of like, I kind of felt like I was selfish before this class, because it was just like, you're thinking like, oh, this is about me. I'm an artist and it's just about me. It's just about me being successful and my career. And then when I started doing this class, I was like, whoa, this is even more fulfilling than actually doing it myself in a lot of ways, where I was just like, wow, I really love working with these kids. I really like pushing them and making them better than they thought they could be. I always go back to this one girl who had, this is going to be a long episode, but I just remember having this one girl who was, she's like 8 years old, and we used to do my first year. One of the plays we did was Wizard of Oz. We did like this truncated version where we just picked like a bunch of like the big scenes and we did them. And I just remember this one. And we had to have like four or five different Dorothys, because the kids' parents would get upset and shit. So we had to have like Dorothy number 4 and Dorothy number 8 or whatever the fuck. And then there was another play that I wrote, like a play that I wrote one year, one half of the semesters or whatever. So this one girl, she's plays the Wicked Witch number 4 or whatever. And she was fucking great. And I think she played the last witch, because that's when the witch like dies, and she was really into it. She hammed it up. She did what she needed to do. And she just kept coming back to the camp. So I think I was there for 3 or 4 summers. And I just remember the last time that I saw her work was, I was like at the head of the camp. I was the camp director, where I was more of an administrative role. And I just remember like walking in the the theater and seeing her on stage by herself doing this monologue. And it was just like, yeah, this is like what it's about. And this kid was like probably 13, 14 years old, same age as Gianna Bryant. And it was just like, yeah, fucking yeah. I don't know if she's acting now, but I know that's a kid that has confidence. I remember just working with all these different types of kids that made me a better actor. Like, so that those summers made me better, and it made me the great day playing actor that I am right now. I have more in the tank to give that people haven't seen yet. But, you know, it was just, that just made me think about that. And I think death in that way makes you think about your life and your own mortality and the people that you touch. Obviously, when someone famous dies, it touches a lot of people. And this has to be, this is probably the worst celebrity death that I've experienced. And I was in my life, and I'll be 40 next month. I think death for me, like the first funeral that I went to, it was my grandfather. So it was my dad's dad that died. This was like maybe 85 or 86. And it was kind of a blur, but I just remember like seeing, you're like 5 or 6 years old, seeing your mom and dad cry. Like these people that are like fucking superheroes, and you see them broken down. The first death that really threw me for a gut punch was when my aunt died. My mother's youngest sister passed away. And she just died suddenly of a massive heart attack. And that was like fall of 1990. And she had a kid that's a cousin that's my age. And that really fucked me up. That was one that were like, when she died, because she was like the nicest aunt on my mom's side of the family, because like my mom included and her older sister can be kind of mean, kind of high strung and very like, you know, on edge at times. But they are decent people, good people, but the truth is the truth. And she was the one to be like, all right, you know, this, okay. She was more chill, and she was gone. And I remember after she died, it was one of those things where like I would always worry, like sometimes I would be at home alone and, you know, I'd wait for my dad to pull up, kind of get nervous if he wasn't there at a certain time. My mom would be working late at night, and then sometimes when they were asleep, I would walk into their room and just to see if their stomachs were moving up and down, to see if they were breathing and stuff. You know, I did that for a long time. And the dreams were, whew. So death is a thing that we all got to go through. And then buried my uncle, less than two months ago. And it's just that finality, and all you have is those memories and what you left behind and all that stuff. But with celebrity, you think about like the first celebrity death that really fucked me up was River Phoenix. So he died in 93 in October, Halloween, 1993. Jesus. And you say, Chris, River Phoenix, why? Well, Stand By Me was the first rated R movie that I'd ever seen. And like, I just fell in love with that movie, like the music, the story. I really loved, and the fact that those people were, so they were 10 years older than me, but looking at the movie, like they were young, like they were young kids in their maybe teens or early, I had to be in there. If Stand By Me was 1986, and I was 6 years old, I might have seen it when I was 7 or 8. It was on video. So if I was 6 years old, 7 years old, he was 16, 17 when he did that movie. And because he was 10 years older than me. But they were kids going, doing these adventures. And like Stand By Me and The Goonies were like two big movies for me when I was growing up. But then to see, and then to follow his career after that, to see him doing all these other movies and cool, interesting flicks. And it was just fucked me up, because that he was one of the first people that made me want to act. And I didn't really know it, but I would know watching him that, you know, he was really dope. That really messed me up. And it's just one of those things, man. But It just made this death made me think of that. And you think about like Michael Jackson, Prince, and Whitney. Those were, I know someone mentioned that they were, and I don't want to attribute it to somebody because I don't want people to try to attack them or anything like that. But in a lot of ways, those were kind of self-destructive in a way, with drugs and stuff like that. But with Kobe, this was so unexpected, man. This was like, you're chilling on a Sunday and you're like, Kobe, what? No. And he was just like this superhero, and he wasn't afraid to, he didn't care about being the villain either. Like, he was the perfect heel, where he was just like, no, I'm going to win. And just, you know, hearing him on these podcasts where he's like, I wanted to beat you guys. I wanted to cut your throats out. You know, there's a bunch of like interviews, but like I said, I'll recap it. I'll just say it again now. If you want a little more levity, you can listen to Pod Don't Lie with Sam Morril and Stavros Halkias. It's just, the episode is just titled Kobe. And then you can listen to Bomani Jones. And Bomani Jones is fucking, he's great. Like, he's Bomani. And he just provides this really great insight. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Kobe and what he meant to me, and obviously, you know, you guys have what he meant to you, and I would be remiss if I couldn't call myself a podcaster anymore if I didn't just say my piece about him and just, you know, apply it to my life. And yes, I'm making it about me, his death about me, but I have my podcast as a platform to do that. But he was one of those celebrities that was just very impactful, and I think we missed out on a lot of great things that he was going to do. And you know, people always talk about, you know, they'll bring up Colorado. I still, obviously he cheated on his wife, and that was wrong. I think that he said, I still want to get on SNL if there's a possibility. So I'll just say the case was thrown out. The case was thrown out, and he's made a settlement, and then he made a statement that people run with, and they say, you know, and to basically minimize his impact on society and the culture. And he said things that would make it go away, to put things to bed, basically. That's all I'll say about Colorado. But at the same time, a lot of this, he was a human being. And human beings are fallible. Human beings are not perfect. But if there's any, and human beings make transgressions, and when you make transgressions, if you're given the opportunity, it helps you to change and helps to make you better. And whatever those transgressions that he had in the past, I feel like he was somebody that learned from them and tried to become a better person. And it seems like he did work on himself. And that's what I'll say about that, because it's going to come a time. And we always have this discussion on Twitter. I usually am on the sidelines about it. I don't feel like arguing with people on social media, but I will say that, outside of your family, You're gonna have people in your family and people that you love pass away and die. Your family and friends, it's gonna happen, and you dread it happening, and it's hard to not think about it and to think about your own death. That being said, outside of your family and friends, there's gonna be a celebrity that you like that is and was problematic. They're gonna die. And you're going to feel some kind of way about it when people bring up the bad things that they did. and it's going to happen to you. So that it's a sensitive thing. You know, it's a sensitive thing when people die and people want to, you know, they immediately want to throw out the essays and the articles, the 10 things that make this thing problematic and blah, 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 blah. But there's a human element to it, man. And I think just be aware of that when you see people hurting, just have empathy for those people. You know, I don't have to get into all of it, but you know what I'm talking about. If you listen to this show long enough, you know what I'm talking about. But RIP to Kobe and Gianna Bryant and the families that passed away in the helicopter, the families and the people that passed away on the helicopter. I know I'm not as eloquent as most when it comes to things like this, but I wanted to share my thoughts and what he meant to me, like, and how I tried to apply that stuff to my life. And I had to do a show that night that he died. I know, it gets so fucking hard to do comedy, but the way that I do stand up, guys, I try to talk about my life, and that's probably why I'm not as far along as I would like to be, because there's a lot of things that go on in life where you try to make the bad things that happen to you I'm a comedian and I'm a fucking artist, that you try to make things that have happened to you, you try to make that funny, you try to make it meaningful, and you try to talk about I try to talk about complicated things and make them funny. Case in point, I had to get on stage and maybe one day I'll give you the set on Patreon, or maybe one day this can be a bit that I think has legs and whatever, and it'll be on something that you can record, you can listen to or something, you can stream it or some shit. But I was trying to find out a way to talk about him on stage, and I opened with it. Like, if you go back to my tweets from a week ago, like I talked about, like, how I talked about how, like, what he meant to me. Like, I got grew my first fro out because of him, and I bought a Nintendo 64 just to play that game. I got these sneakers, the Kobe ADs, the one that came out like 2018. I'm looking at them right now, actually. Most comfortable. I thought they were so cool. Like, the most comfortable shoes that I'd had in a long time. And they were like the first sneaker of a basketball player that I had bought in ages, maybe since Jordans, like when I was a kid. Like, I'd had, no, in eighth grade, probably, I had some, like, I had some Larry Johnsons and the React Juice things, and the bubble came out of them. The little, you know how if you would have a leveler, like, that you'd buy from Home Depot or Heckinger's, remember Heckinger's, DC, Maryland, Virginia people, and they have that gel in them, you know, the Larry React Juice and all that bullshit, and it popped out, and so I took them back to the store and got these John Stockton Air Maestros, and these Kobe's. Like, I was like, oh, these look really cool. It's like the first time when I started noticing sneakers, and I remember going, like, I just went to the House of Hoops at the mall one day, and I was like, these are the shoes I've been seeing. Let me try them on. They felt so fucking great. And I remember wearing them to a show that I had that night, and I bombed in them and opening for this musician, a magician. And it was just a really bad show. The lights went out, the power went out during my set. And, then I had to get them back, and they were old, and I just didn't do well. And that club doesn't exist anymore, so whatever. But then I just kept wearing them, and they just kind of became a shoe that I just wore a lot. I just wore all the time, and I liked them. They're not, I don't think they're beaters yet. Like, beaters are shoes you wear every day. I don't wear them every day, but I just love those sneakers. And some people, I got get the most compliments out of wearing these. And people say, are those sandals? Like, no, these are sneakers. I guess because they kind of look like I'm on the top. But I walked into Destination XL, my menswear apparel shop of choice. What the guy helping me out, see, you got the Kobe's. I was like, yeah, man. You know, and where the fuck am I going with this? Oh God. So yeah, like those shoes. And I said, you know what? I tweeted it that late Sunday afternoon. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to wear these shoes tonight and I'm going to try a joke that maybe I'll try a new bit or do something that I'm afraid of doing. Just because, you know, it's like we're all going to die and Kobe's dead and he lived his life to the fullest. One thing that Pablo Torre said on High Noon, he basically said that Kobe did not waste any of his time on Earth. You know, he didn't waste any time to do everything that he did at 41. He didn't waste any time. And I was like, why not just fucking lead with this bit? And I just talked about some of the things that he said. And then I just made a joke about, not about him, but about social media and about an interaction that I had on Twitter with somebody that I thought was being a little too cute online about the whole situation about people sharing stories. I'll post it on maybe on Patreon one day. Like maybe one day I'll post it. We'll see. But and it got a good response. It got a really good response. And then I just did my set and it was one of the best sets that I had, like a short set that I had had this year so far. And I did that like at, it was a show, If You Build It, in the city on Subculture. And it's one of those things where like I've kind of been ranting about these fucking young kids, these cool hip kids, they don't fucking get it. And they reacted to it. They laughed. And I tried to open with it at Levity Live on Thursday night and it was crickets. So, and these are like, oh, they, you just, you hear the name and it just didn't go well. And I had a set that was like, let me just fucking get through this. Let me give you some A material and I'll get the fuck off. And the guy before me just slaughtered. I just changed the energy. But it's just like, I kind of had that revelation of like, I've done well most of the time. Like, I'm at least like, if this were the major leagues of like doing comedy, I'd make the All-Star game, you know, but you strike out sometimes, you still strike out. But, you know, a lot of times on podcast, I fucking killed that shit, bro. I know that I'm a good comedian. I'm confident in myself to say that I'm a good comic, but I still have a long ways to go. But I'm just at that point where it's like, I want to push myself and I need to push myself to do more and to talk about the things that I want to talk about and make it palatable for the general public. And I just remember like leaving the show on Thursday and hearing the guy closing out the show, just no disrespect to him, but it's just like, it's just generic. It's just generic shit that, you know, these motherfuckers, I don't know, man. I always say the way I do it, the way I do it, it's different. It's like I'm better than that. But it, because I think I'm better than that, and that shit ain't gonna work all the time. And I gotta figure out how to make that shit work majority of the time. And I think that's the fun in it, but I also think that you know, it's one of those things, and we gotta push ourselves to be better people. And all of that jazz, I've talked about almost an hour about this. You're just going to get a long episode of me rambling about death and making a celebrity's death about me. But I hope I hope that you got something out of this, but I've got a couple of announcements, and then I'll get it back into the regular format of the show, where I'll share some news with you. So I want to give you I'll give you a couple of movie reviews. I'll do that, and I'll plug some stuff, and we'll talk a little bit more. So next weekend, February 9th through the 14th, I'm going to be at the Borgata in Atlantic City at the Music Box Theater. Every show that night is going to be at 9 o'clock. It's going to be an hour long. And I believe I'm there with Mike Vecchione and Joe DeVito. I want to say that I am. And I want to say that I'm not lying to you. And it would have been smart for me to actually have this page ready, because I felt that I was going to talk to you guys about it. Let me see. Hopefully this is the right page. Okay. So yeah. So the ninth through the 14th, I'm there with Mike Vecchione and Joe DeVito. I was right. But I think the last night I'm going to be there, Megan Hanley is going to be replacing Mike Vecchione, because I think Mike Vecchione is going to be somewhere else. So if you're able to come to those shows, come to one of those. If you're in Atlantic City, if you want a nice getaway with your loved one, come on out. It's going to be fun. Another thing I wanted to talk about that I saw on the social media platform, Daniel Kaluuya, actor from Get Out and more recently Queen and Slim. He says, Kaluuya says he is tired of being asked about race. Queen and Slim star says, I'm not defined by it. I'm just Daniel, who happens to be black. The Get Out and Black Panther star Daniel Kaluuya said he doesn't want to be defined by racial issues, and he finds it boring to talk about his work in terms of race. The British actor and writer gained international fame with his starring role in the horror film Get Out, for which he was nominated for a string of awards before moving on to Marvel's Black Panther and the Steve McQueen thriller Widows. Speaking to the Radio Times, Kaluuya, 30, said he was resisting the racial narrative into which he felt what he was being forced. I'm not going to ignore that I'm surrounded by racial issues, but I'm not defined by it. I'm just Daniel, who happens to be black. This year's Oscars and BAFTA shortlist received heavy criticism for their lack of diversity, but Kaluuya said he did not want to be pushed into becoming a spokesman for black actors. What is there to talk about race? It's just boring to me. What's the debate? I'm more of a doer. I'm just going to do what I want to do. Although race is an issue for the center of Get Out, which follows a series of disturbing events when an African-American man meets his white girlfriend's family, Kaluuya said he had played a wide variety of roles that often went ignored, and he did not want to become the race guy. The Fades ain't about race. Psychoville ain't about race. Skins ain't about race. Chat Room ain't about race. Johnny English Reborn ain't about race. But that almost gets erased. There's a narrative that is pushed, he added. In his latest venture, Queen and Slim, he stars alongside Jodie Turner-Smith as a couple who go on the run after a Tinder date gone wrong. When driving home, the pair are pulled over by an aggressive policeman whom Kaluuya's character Slim ends up shooting in self-defense. Kaluuya said he might have had some reservations about taking on another role that would lead him to being asked about race, but it was the love story element of the film that attracted him. Yes, it's got those moments about race, but that's more of a catalyst. I'm just going to finish this article. The British actor, writer from North London has previously said he started doing more American movies as he felt he was not getting roles in England because of his skin color. Now he has clarified that it was mainly to do with lack of challenging roles. And at the age of 25, he found he was too old to play children and too young to play men. His Black Panther co-star Michael B. Jordan introduced an inclusion rider to his production company to ensure more diverse cast and crew. His film Just Mercy was one of the first to be made with that rider in place, but it just missed out on an Oscar nomination. While he is working on another American film, Kaluuya said he would be open to do something in the UK, such as a play upstairs in the Royal Court or at the Young Vic, but right now he wanted to experiment. The good thing is there's no expectation on me, so I could bomb. But I had a good innings. I don't know what that means. Had good innings. I don't think the needed to be there. Anyway, this piece was from The Guardian. And does it say who it was written by? By Jessica Murray on January 28th. So people were talking about this on social media. And part of me is like, so most people on Black Twitter, obviously, they're like, well, nigga, go back to London. You taking Black people's roles, blah, blah, blah. A lot of times when you do movies like the ones that he's doing and you're a Black actor that has success, you're going to be asked about race, and you're going to be asked about race and not about the work. Like, you're not going to be asked like, oh, what did you do to prepare for this? And how, you're not going to be asked about technical things. Like, I heard, you know, there was a conversation where Variety does this series called Actors on Actors around award season. And I remember, Mahershala Ali and Denzel's son, John David Washington, were talking, and they were talking about a lot of these same things. Like, and Mahershala Ali was saying, basically, this is one of the first times where people were actually talking about the craft of acting, and I got to answer these types of questions, and it wasn't just about like race. So I think that's what Daniel Kaluuya is running into right now, where people want to talk about that stuff. And you know, hey, Daniel, I wouldn't mind talking about race. You let me do some of this shit. Actually, what I've wanted to do for a long time, what I would like to do, part of my dream, is to get enough success or just get the opportunity to do one of those detective shows that they do in the UK, like one of those dark, eerie detective shows where you have a flawed detective, my character, and trying to solve a crime, you know? That's what I want to do. I want to go to the UK. Would I love to do American shit? Of course I would. But that's one of my favorite things to watch, and I love to be a part of that. I think these Black actors and actors of color, they just want to be treated like everybody else. They just want to be treated, oh, how'd you prepare for this role? And what did you do? And how long did it take you to do that fight scene? Did you have to train? They just want to be asked the same questions that their white counterparts are being asked. I think that's the heart of his argument. You know, I don't think it's like, oh, well, just don't do these parts, motherfucker. Go back to you. I don't think it's about that. I think he wants to be in these interviews. He wants to talk about more than just being Black. And I think a lot of times, and I ran into it on a lower level, like doing theater in Chicago and just doing like Black theater. It's not like, I would say, I don't know if it's changed or not, but I can speak on it to what I experienced was just like the Black plays in Chicago. It was like, okay, one of the theater houses that were the most popular in the city, the most prestigious, you know, Black History Month, they would do something and every Black actor would go for the part and all that shit. Or they'd do an August Wilson play, which I would love to be a part of. I feel like I'm old enough now to be doing those roles. And, you know, you would do that and that would be it, you know, and that would be the thing that people would come. I've talked about it on the show a bunch of times, but I think that's mostly what he's talking about. You know, I think he just wants to be somebody who does his job and that's it, you know, and wants to be treated like his white counterparts. You know, I don't think Timothée Chalamet doesn't have to deal with that. Like, Timothée Chalamet can do a part and say, oh, how did you prepare for this? Or, you know, what drew you to this role? And, you know, what do you plan on doing next? And what challenges did you face? You know, I just think that's what it's, I think that's what it's about. And I think that's really all it is, as opposed to people trying to have like this huge discourse about you know, whether you're going to cancel Daniel Kaluuya, whether or not he's going to be canceled. Let me give you some movie reviews. All right, so let me give you some movie reviews. So this week I went to the theater and I saw before my show at Levity that I had a mediocre set at. I saw this movie. Where the hell is it? I saw The Gentlemen. Where the hell is it? Where's my tab? Okay. I saw The Gentlemen, the Guy Ritchie movie, starring Matthew McConaughey, Charlie Hunnam, Hugh Grant, and Colin Farrell, and Michelle Dockery. So I saw this movie. I'll read the blurb to you. Here we go. Mickey Pearson is an American expatriate who became rich by building a highly profitable marijuana empire in London. When word gets out that he's looking to cash out of the business, it soon triggers an array of plots and schemes, including bribery and blackmail from shady characters who want to steal his domain. 73% on Rotten Tomatoes. This was good. Coming into this movie, a couple of the Asian film critics that I follow were talking about how racist this movie was towards the Asian characters in it. Henry Golding from Last Christmas and Crazy Rich Asians was in it, and they had like racial slurs against him, and they said like they called people Chinamen and did the whatchamacallit thing, like the way Asians use the L instead of the R. It's like fucking racist shit. And it said it kind of took him out of the movie, and I get it, but at the same time, I think those characters were just fucking racist. I mean, like, those people were criminals. Those people they're bad people. It's almost like when you watch like a civil rights movie, like you kind of like those movies make you mad because black people were being treated like shit and they're probably calling them nigger. So it's like you can't really have a good race movie or civil rights movie if the racism isn't good or isn't palatable. Palatable is the wrong word. If it's not like hard hitting, if you don't have that hard hitting racism in the movie, it's not going to be good. So it's just kind of like, you know, and they're saying like it's kind of antiquated. I don't know when this looks like this is set in modern day. I just think those people are pieces of shit. You know, all the characters in the movie are not really good people. And it's like, they're like, it's one of those movies like, I'm tricking you. Nope, I'm tricking you. Nope, you got me. Oh, wait a minute, I swerved it back on you. It's like, I'm tricking you. And they just say, cunt, you fucking cunt. They're like, they're just cursing. You know, it's just, I think it's a good movie. I think you just kind of have to, I don't know. It's just an interesting thing, way to like, I think, yes, they're being racist, but then they're just bad. Those people are criminals and they're bad people. So if they're bad people and people are getting killed, I think they, like, these people are killing each other. The fact that they're racist is just like, that's just embedded in the DNA and those people being pieces of shit. The Asian characters are bad. The white characters are bad. The black characters are bad. I don't know. I don't know how you would. It's a movie. I don't know. I guess I'm just looking at it as a way where it's like maybe black people. So now that more people have a voice, and you kind of see what's going on and you kind of hear that. And I hear them because I really respect those critics. I wouldn't be following them if I didn't, but it's kind of like, well, you're just seeing more of your people in these situations and in these films. It's almost like interesting that they even had Asian people in it, in the movie, you know, and they actually had black people in the movie too. I think that I don't know if this is the most black people that I've seen in a Guy Ritchie movie, but I know it's the most Asian people I've seen. I think Guy Ritchie's almost always had a sprinkle of black people in this. And you kind of know who's going to low-key come out on top. If you know who the lead is without really spoiling anything. But that is interesting. I just think that now that you're seeing more people of color in film starting to sprout up and more opportunities are coming, you're probably going to see like more of those people being racist. Because if they're not in the movie, they don't have, these white people don't really have a reason to be racist against them in a lot of ways. If that makes sense. I don't know. I just find that interesting that I think, yeah, these characters are pieces of shit. So if they're pieces of shit, racism's not going to be racism's going to be there. So yeah, I recommend this movie. It's good. It's one of those January, like this is like that dead period. It's like late January, February. You probably, and it seems like a lot of fun stuff that I would be excited to see is starting to come out. Like even that, you got the first superhero movie of the year is coming out this week, that Harley Quinn standalone, you know, or a sequel or what have you, is coming out, and it's February. And normally, you know, that would be a movie that would come out either during the summer, and always talk about on the show how stuff gets pulled. These movies get pushed up to come out. So this is like the first big release of the year. But then at the same time, there's a Blumhouse movie coming out with my girl Lucy Hale. Katie Holmes is going to be in a movie called Brahms, The Boy Part 2. That I'm going to most likely going to see because she's in it. What else? The Photograph is coming out. I'm going to see that. What else? Jeez. There's a couple downhill. Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You think I'm not going to see that? You know, that's fun. It's some fun stuff coming out. So I'm excited about the movies this year. So it's going to be some good stuff. What else? Okay, so, and then Friday, I didn't think I was going to go to the movie theater because I had that show Thursday and I saw The Gentleman and I got home late and I had to do a voiceover audition that I had to record some stuff, which I actually think turned out pretty good. It's like maybe the second or third one that I've had. And I felt really good about it. It's like a commercial. And yeah, that I was really excited about. So I did that, turned that in, and I was a zombie. I was a zombie on Friday. After work, I was like, oh, I'm just going to go get a haircut. And I'll take a shower and go fucking go to sleep. Just, you know. I didn't know I was going to get a hair. I was just thinking, well, should I get a haircut? And I'm driving down. I was like, I go to the barbershop. And then I got out before 5 o'clock out to the shop. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go see the Rhythm Section. I'm going to go see that joint. So I went and saw the Rhythm Section. I will read you the blurb. Here we go. Stephanie Patrick veers down a path of self-destruction after a tragic plane crash kills her family. When Stephanie discovers it wasn't an accident, she turns to a former CIA operative who can help her find the culprits. But her quest to uncover the truth soon turns into a full-blown quest for revenge as Patrick decides to punish those responsible. This movie stars Blake Lively, Jude Law, and Sterling K. Brown. 33% on Rotten Tomatoes, but 75% in my heart. I like Blake Lively. I look at her as one of these white starlets that's actually gotten better as she's gotten older. I used to watch, what's the show? I didn't finish it. Gossip Girl. Like, she's super pretty. And, you know, I never really, sometimes you never really, you kind of toss those actresses off, and she starts doing these movies and these art house films, and she's like, oh, she's actually got chops, and she seems to get better every time I see her. And It had Sterling K. Brown. She was making out with him in the trailer. I was like, all right, do it, Blake. I'm all for that. And, you know, she's doing a British accent, and she did pretty well with that. And it's an entertaining movie. It's about like a hit woman that's actually, shout out to actually David Chen, Asian film critic of Slash Filmcast and what is his podcast? Culturally Relevant. That's he that I got to check out. I was following him, and I was looking at something he had posted about it on. He posted a review on his IGTV page, and I didn't get through all of it. But he was just saying, like, what if this a hit woman that's like bad at her job, and it's like certain instances that's like, oh yeah, she's figuring out how to do it. And obviously it's kind of truncated because she's got this one main mission, but it's actually, it's basically an impossible white man movie. And that the homie Rod from The Black Guy Who Tips coined. And that's what it is. So if you're locked into that, see, that's the thing. Like David Chen was just trying to say, and his person that he was reviewing it with was like, yeah, you know, some of this stuff is like far fetched. But once you're locked into that, once you realize that it's a like kind of a far-fetched storyline, I think you can just be comfortable with what's going on and just rooting for her to do what she needs to do. But I think the fact that she wasn't good at it at first was what makes it interesting. And it makes it like, ooh, you know, kind of, you know, so I rocked with it, man. I thought it was entertaining and, I had a good time seeing it. It's just one of those movies where, you know, I just think I think when you're in these movie clubs and stuff, I don't think you really take the L as hard as you would if you just weren't a psycho like me that was obsessed with movies and liked movies, loved movies as much as I do. Just for somebody that, you know, you pay $20 a month and you can see 3 movies a week. You know, it's not that bad. You're like, man, this shit would suck. And I paid $17 for this ticket. So I would just say, it's entertaining. You can go see it and have a good time. You could go to the matinee joint. You could go to the $6 joint and just, you know, sneak some candy in and have a good time. You know what I mean? So, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I'm just going to say I enjoyed that shit. So that's that, the rhythm section and the gentleman, I recommend it. All right. So I said that I had an announcement and I'll get you the hell out of here. So I've kind of been holding on to this. I don't even know if I should be saying it yet, but I've kind of been holding on this for a few months that I feel like I'll make an announcement, just go ahead and say it. I'm going to be making my Broadway debut next month in a play called The Lehman Trilogy. That's going to be directed by Sam Mendes, and I have a small part in the play. It's a big deal for me. I'm super excited about it. Really that right now, that's all I can say. And you can look that up for yourself and see what it's about, but I'm not really going to say much about it, but it's going to be opening in March and it's going to be running for a while. So I'm really, excited about that. And, you know, if you find yourself in the New York area, I will be there for the next, 4 to 6 months doing that show. And, it's really cool for me. I never thought it would happen, to be quite honest with you. And the opportunity came up, and it's really cool. I'm very excited about it. Yeah. So I hope if you find yourself, in New York, come see it. And I never thought this shit would happen. And I'm hoping it leads to some other things. So yeah. All right, folks. I reckon that's it. I've talked to you and rambled long enough. So if you're in South Jersey and you're in near Atlantic City, come see the show. Go Chiefs. Congratulations to Lamar Jackson. You earned it. They said you should be a wide receiver and you fucking proved them wrong. You know. All right. Take it easy, everybody. RIP Kobe.